something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, how tall are you?
5'8".
5'8". That's pretty good for lady height, right?
For lady height, yeah. I'm a giant. No. It's on the upper end, but not so much.
Well, I'm 6'3", which is like a good level of height. Like
I think of that as pretty tall, actually.
Well, I mean, it's tall, but it's not. I mean, it's a little inconvenient. I do bump my head a lot and forget a lot of things as a result. But it's not. If it was a little more, then I would just have terminal brain injuries from running into things.
Yeah, as my family would say, it looks like you got some Dutch in you.
Dutch?
Yeah.
Because the Dutch are tall.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Well, there you go. But some people are taller than others. For some people, and for many things, we're really getting into the area of gigantism.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting into areas where it's amazing, into areas where it's kind of sad. But
and keep in mind too that humans are already considered megafauna,
yes,
to some degree, right? Like we're pretty much dominating the mammal species here. So when you think of the ability to grow even larger, it seems a bit odd, but it does happen.
Right.
This is known as acromegaly, and it is usually a disorder of the pituitary gland. Usually there's a tumor that grows there, and it causes the body just to continue growing, particularly in puberty when you are growing anyway, so your bones get very, very large.
Yeah, a lot of human growth hormone pumping out, increasing the bone sizes, which, of course, makes the body bigger. If this isn't corrected, which we're going to talk about in a minute, you actually end up having organ omegaly, which, in which case you have the organs getting bigger in size, too. And, yes, you end up with an individual that's very tall or can be very tall. Not everyone with this condition ends up becoming a legit giant.
Right, and particularly if you get this condition as an adult already. So
right.
What you find is that, like, for instance, your tongue starts to swell, get very large, and that can lead to a host of problems.
Oh, yeah, problems like hypertension, high blood pressure, diabetes, sleep apnea.
This is when
your breathing stops during sleep, carpal tunnel syndrome. And then again, as organomegaly hits sets in, even more problems. Especially a higher incidence of heart disease. So, sadly, you see these a lot of these individuals they are giants. They become, they reach this great stature, and especially with the individuals that have a gigantism that involve themselves in the entertainment industry, we end up getting this this grandiose vision of them as just supermen, you know, strong men, and in many cases they are very strong individuals, but later in life. It often takes a real toll on them.
Right, because think about all of that blood that needs to be pumping to all those now oversized organs. It is very stressful on the body. And when you talk about superhero component of that, I instantly think of Andre the Giant.
Yes. Andre Ruzumov, the wrestler, actor, Frenchman. Yeah, he only lived to age of 46, but he was 7 feet tall. And 520 pounds at the end. He was he chose not to be treated and died of cardiac complications from the disease. But he's definitely a legend as far as modern day TV and film era giants goes.
Oh yeah, I always think of him in The Princess Bride.
Yeah, yeah,
because he was a wonderful movie.
And... Yeah, wonderful movie. He was great in that. Mm-hmm. He was a larger than life character both on the screen and inside the ring and outside where he. He allegedly had just an amazing ability to drink alcohol. Could just really.
Yeah, I'm sure he won most of those contests.
Yeah, down
and
like it was going out of style.
Yeah.
And you still have individuals with gigantism that are involved in entertainment and pro wrestling today. Pro wrestling alone, you have Paul White, who wrestles as Big Show. You have this guy. There's an Indian gentleman by the name of Dolph Singh Arana, who wrestles as the Great Khali, various other individuals. So because you have stature like that, inevitably some guy with a few bucks is going to come up to you and be like, hey, have you ever considered being in entertainment?
Right.
And then you have there are other characters of note as well. There's there was a man by the name of Maurice Tillet, who was a Russian-born French professional wrestler who wrestled under the name the French Angel. He died back in 54. There's a man by the name of Rondo Hatton, who was an American actor. He died in 1946, but he became really iconic as playing these grotesque thug-type characters in a lot of old B-movies. And he was rather iconic. In fact, I believe the character of Shrek is actually based on his general physical appearance because he had a very brutish look to him. You know? And then, of course, there's Richard Kyle, who played Jaws in the James Bond movies, the old James Bond movies.
Oh, yeah.
He's still with us, over 7 feet tall. I think he's shrunk a little just with age. You know, you kind of end up stooping over a bit. But the list of other individuals who've had at least treated acromegaly is pretty interesting because it includes some surprises. For instance, you were surprised at Tony Robbins.
Yes.
Actually,
I said that I just thought it was his oversized ego that I was perceiving.
Yeah, you just thought he was larger than life.
And yeah,
just,
you know, because he is. Yeah.
And he is. He's 6'7". Poet Wallace Stevens, this surprised me. He was only 6'3", so it wasn't, you know, as noticeable a case of gigantism, but he was a pretty tall individual. This is a guy who wrote the poem The Emperor of Ice Cream and other works. The Roman Emperor Maximinus the First, who reigned from 235 to 238, according to Herodian's Historia Augusta, he was 8'6" in height, but that's somewhat doubtful that he was actually that tall. But still, there was a giant from the history books. And really, there's like a whole list of individuals you can find online.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Sandy Allen. She was the world's largest or tallest woman at 7'7¼", and she actually was a wonderful educator. And a lot of her education materials centered around differences. She was definitely trying to promote that with other kids and respecting other differences.
Yeah.
So
a lot of these individuals may have made a buck or two off of their stature, or it may have provided them with opportunities that they wouldn't have otherwise had. But a lot of them were really fascinating and successful individuals in their own right that had, you know, nothing to do with their height.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe Wallace Stevens' poetic gifts were, you know, if he was a shorter man, he wouldn't have had them. But I think that's a difficult argument to make.
Well, it's hard to say. That's right. But as you mentioned, there is treatment for this. One of the treatments is surgical removal
of the tumor. Yeah.
Yeah.
To actually get in there and remove the thing that is causing all of this unchecked growth.
Right. And Sandy Allen actually had that when she was 20 years old. But nonetheless, at the age of 53, she still passed away because, again, at that point, you know, she had reached such a height and her organs were so large that it did tax her body.
And then there are other methods of treating it. You can also use medication to halt the hormone.
Mm-hmm.
And then also some individuals undergo radiation treatments as well.
Yeah, and we should probably, I don't know if we mentioned that before, but because of the tumor on the pituitary gland, what is happening is you're getting an excess amount of growth hormones
right.
that are shooting out.
So yes,
that is the root cause right
yeah.
there.
So you can take medication to check that, but but in many cases they often just go for the more, you know, certain cure, I guess. We're not just here to talk about humans that are large. We're also here to talk about animals that became true giants. And of course, when you're talking about gigantic animals, you can't help but to think of our friends, the dinosaurs.
Right? Yeah, immediately, right? And most of the reason for that is because we don't really get to see small bones of dinosaurs because they don't preserve that well.
Yeah.
So the bones that we see exhibited in museums usually belong to the behemoth. So immediately we think about these guys, which they definitely had gigantism. Or I guess you could say in the natural world at that time, for the composition of the elements in the world that they were living in, this made most sense for them, some animals, depending on their resources and energy.
Yeah, and there's a theory, too, that it was basically an arms race of size, because mm-hmm. the larger the organism is, the fewer predators it has, because you're this gigantic, hulking beast. Not everything's going to be able to really eat you.
Right.
or stand a chance of even taking you down. It's going to come and like pull on your leg, and you just stomp on it. So there's an evolutionary advantage to having a larger body and a larger stature, even if it comes with certain negatives as well, such as obviously you have to eat more food, and then that also affects the rate at which young develop and various other procreative necessities.
Yeah, and it's said that sauropods were particularly at an advantage for this because they could have, you know, a decent size of youngins, and they could protect them all, and then they could pretty much rapidly grow to these very huge sizes. And again, another advantage of that is you could stomp out the competition.
Literally, yeah.
Literally, yeah. They're actually from a Scientific American article called "Is There Any Evolutionary Advantage to Gigantism?" These sauropods are actually called the first true giants of the land, and they were small-headed, long-necked. That's probably what you're thinking of when you think of about a sauropod. And they appeared at the beginning of that time, about, I don't know, 200 million years ago. Some of these predatory dinosaurs exceeded 1 ton. Toward the end of the Jurassic, many sauropods reached 10 to 20 tons, and some weighed as much as 50 tons.
Wow.
And a few may have exceeded 100 tons and 150 feet in length, which is actually rivaling some of our largest modern whales.
Yeah, because as we've mentioned before, the blue whale is still the largest organism. Certainly...
Yeah, that's tricky to...
Yeah, because as we discussed in our largest organism episode, depending on how you define organism, you can actually get into some even larger things that are not vertebrates. But certainly the largest vertebrate that has ever lived, the blue whale.
Yeah.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I never thought I'd take my three young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery. But that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, and of course, you think about tyrannosaurs, dominant meat eaters of the late Cretaceous area.
Or scavengers, whatever the hot theory of the moment happens to be.
Exactly. They grew steadily until they were teenagers. And they were marauding and mopey. And then they went through a growth spurt, becoming five times larger in just 7 years. So, again, we're talking about, I mean, the period of growth here is pretty amazing when you become five times larger. If you think about a teenager right now, they maybe have a couple more inches that they're going to lop on. But they're certainly not going to become 20 feet tall.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think about the amount of growth. Like in the Milk podcast, we mentioned about baby blue whales taking on like 300 pounds of body weight a day as they feed off their mother's milk. So, the amount of growth taking place with these gigantic organisms is just incredible.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention a couple of other advantages to being so large before we talk about disadvantages. Your metabolic rate decreases with increasing size. So, for instance, you only need to take in 5% of, if you're an elephant, for instance, you only need to take in 5% of your own weight, whereas a shrew or a mouse needs to eat more than its weight each day to survive.
Yeah, you'll hear that stat thrown out a lot when people make the point that the shrew is the most ravenous creature on the planet because it has to eat so much, just eat constantly to survive. And they actually made a movie, ages, a really horrible B movie, that they lampooned on Mystery Science Theater 3000 called, The Giant Shrews, or was it The Killer Shrews? I can't remember, but the basic thing was that they had these giant shrews that were running around that were the size of dogs. that, of course, were dogs with really bad costumes draped over them. And then the idea was that the shrew is just incredibly dangerous, and if it were ever able to reach the size of like a dog, then they would be the most dangerous things ever. But, of course, as we've just mentioned here, their appetite really plays into their size. If the shrew became larger...
They would be playing the violin under a tree,
having
a couple of grapes and being like, hey, guys, totally chilled out. Was this made in the 50s?
Yes.
There seems to be a real obsession with gigantism during that time period.
Oh, yeah. You saw there were giant scorpions, giant spiders, giant ants.
Crabs.
Them. What was the movie
yes.
with the giant ants?
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun. They used to show that on the cable channels back in the day when they were, I think Grandpa Munster hosted a Saturday morning monster movie show. And I remember they would play that. They would play Island of Dr. Moreau, these type of films. But yeah, giant ants, all these things were
great.
Well, these were also easy animals to implement in a bee movie because if you have a giant ant, all you need to do is just get some ants in there, mess with perspective, dub in an actual ant and just make it look larger.
Although, inevitably, they always have a puppet of whatever animal or insect.
Well, you need the head.
Which is kind of
great. With
the
pincers so it can grab a lady and pick
her
up.
Yes, exactly.
But other than that, just throw in the ants and have some people react to it. It's like early CGI.
All right. So other than being featured in bee films, why might you not want to be a giant? Particularly if you are a dinosaur. For starters, all that mass that allows you to stomp others out actually kind of hems you in because you can't fly, you can't run, you can't climb or burrow into the ground to take cover.
So your whole defensive tactic is, hey, I'm this hulking thing and you can't take me down. But then say you have a pack of velociraptors that come around and they're like, actually, we can because we can work together and we're patient. And you're not going anywhere.
Exactly. You're a very large target for us. And because they're at the top of the food chain, there are less of them, and the chances for extinction actually become greater as well.
Right. A large organism having to depend on a lot of other organisms underneath it, even if most of them are just grass. And then you wipe that out, and there you go.
Yeah. And this was really interesting, too. Sarah Deschard, a doctoral candidate at North Carolina State, has studied the plants available during the age of dinosaurs. And she thinks that during the Jurassic, when vegetation was fibrous and low nutrient, it would make sense to have a lot bigger bellies, really, what we're talking about here, because they act as huge vats for fermentation.
Huh.
But she says that when flowering plants with high nutrient contents came along, it was actually a boon to smaller dinos because that gave them an evolutionary advantage because that was just the hit that they needed. So it's kind of interesting to look at it that way. And I also wanted to mention, too, although not dinosaurs, there is a tale of Paleozoic dragonflies that may have existed 300 million years ago.
Wow, and how big were these things?
Wingspan of 2.5 feet.
Ooh, nice.
And they think, this is still a bit of a theory, but this is owing to the planet's thin oxygen makeup of more than 50%. So it was these oxygen levels that actually spawned this dragonfly.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting to imagine, especially during mating season when they do their thing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine? It would be debauchery if today we looked out the window and saw in such great detail and such largeness the mating.
Yeah, dragonflies are great. I love them. But you know what I love even more? And this, and we're moving forward a bit here from dinosaurs. I love dinosaurs, love them as a kid, but you kind of get... I kind of got used to it at an early age, just the idea that it used to be giant lizards. Even though, just as a tangent, I was trying to convince a kid that, like a 4-year-old that my wife and I were babysitting, he had some toy dinosaurs, and I told him, it's like, you know, those are real, right? And he's like, no, it's just a toy.
And
I was like, oh, that's heartbreaking. he'll learn. But I got used to the idea pretty early on. Yes, there were giant dinosaurs at one point or another. And for some reason, giant mammals and giant birds, that was always a much more exciting idea to me. Like it felt newer, I guess, you know? It wasn't as covered in the childhood science literature. So anytime, even today, when I see like a picture of a giant sloth or certainly these giant birds, I'm really impressed. The giant birds are really kind of heartbreaking, though, because so many of these were not even prehistoric creatures. They lived until very recent times.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's talk about these more modern terrestrial animals with gigantism.
Yeah, there was a species of bird called a Haas eagle that reached a height of 8.5 feet. It was a fierce predator that lived in New Zealand. And sadly, it went extinct about 500 years ago due to human hunting and habitat encroachment, which, again, is just kind of sad because it's like, oh, we almost reached the point where we could have seen these and photographed them and maybe conserved them, but they blinked out just a little too soon. And then there are others. There's the elephant bird, which was 10 feet tall, that lived on Madagascar, and it it went out sometime in the 17th century, mm-hmm. I think. There's also, of course, the moa, which was the great flightless bird of New Zealand. And it probably went away about 700 years ago when the Maoris wiped them out. Because they're these big birds. They've evolved to pretty much do whatever they want within a limited environment. But mm-hmm. then suddenly you have an invasive organism around. You have humans who are like the velociraptors we mentioned earlier. They're smart. They're patient, they're cunning, and they know that they can work together to take this animal down and eat it. And then, since it's a larger organism, that you know, there are fewer of them. Reproduction time plays into this as well. They're much more easily wiped out. So everyone feasts on moa for a little bit, and then there's no more.
Yeah, I mean, it is mind-boggling to think the amount and different types of animals that have gone extinct, not just because of man-made causes, but even the something that I believe it was during the Ordovician period. There's mm-hmm. supposed to be like just a proliferation of different species that were then wiped out at the end of that period. But anyway, it just does boggle the mind to try to imagine all different types of flora and fauna.
But not all the giants went away. We still have some rather gigantic animals around today that are worth mentioning.
Oh, yes. The colossal squid.
Yes. And we're doing another podcast on the intelligence of cephalopods. So there's going to be even more squid content there. But the colossal squid reaches some pretty phenomenal lengths.
Yep. The squid was accidentally caught by a New Zealand fisherman in 2007, weighing in at 1,091 pounds and spanning 14 feet. Here's something that really kind of rattles me a bit. Its eye, nearly 10 inches in diameter. So imagine nearly a foot-long eye staring back at you. So that was, I think, particularly rattling for me.
Yeah, squid eyes are amazing, especially when you're talking about something that big, you know, the biggest eye of any animal, really.
Very similar to our eye, actually. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk more about that in our cephalopod podcast.
So when we're talking about things like the colossal squid and also various other giant animals that live in the deep, we're getting into the area of deep-sea gigantism. Particularly, you see this in invertebrates, crustaceans, and other creatures, where they'll have cousins that live in fresh water or shallower waters, and they'll be much smaller. But in the deep, in the cold, cold deep, they grow to enormous size.
Yeah,
and part of it is the cold. Scientists think they say that you look at the temperature and body size. And the bigger animals have smaller surface to volume ratio, so they can more effectively conserve body heat in those cold environments.
So it would be to their advantage to grow bigger.
Yeah, it's kind of like having a fur coat.
Undersea fur coat.
Yeah, it's just there's more of me. So I can go down into these lightless, chilly depths, and it doesn't really affect me that much. Where if I were this slender little creature, then, you know, not so much.
There's this idea, too, that we haven't quite even gotten a grasp of how large some of these creatures are. This is from Discovery News. It says that squid beaks found in the stomachs of sperm whales have actually dwarfed the beak on the colossal squid museum specimen that we just spoke of, suggesting that even more colossal squids lurk in the cold, dark, deep.
Yeah, we just haven't seen them yet. I mean, for the longest, we had never managed to capture footage of a live giant squid. And I remember the day that we actually had that footage when it was a few years back, and suddenly it was on YouTube everywhere. And it wasn't really even that impressive of footage, but it felt kind of heartbreaking because you're like, oh, you know, there's a mystery that we can check off the list.
Yeah, yeah. Although, I mean, incredibly cool to be able to verify, right? From the same Discovery News article by Jennifer Villegas, she was actually talking about how these creatures may have grown to such a large size, too, because of the lengths that they have to go to to find food, to scavenge.
Because when you're a small creature, even if you're eating a lot, your kingdom your domain in which you hunt for prey is relatively small. But when you reach these larger size, you're having to really, really go out there and hunt. You're covering a vast underwater territory.
Which may be why the Humboldt squid have shown up Monterey Bay and in various different places. They're still trying to figure out why. What's the explanation for that? But but it does play into morphology for sure. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but when we get back, we are going to talk about what could be horrific to some people. Something called a hissing cockroach. It's the Madagascar hissing cockroach, and it's quite large. We'll talk about that and some other insects.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. It is 2024, and we're going to get through this together, folks. My campaign promise to all of you here on Next Question is going to be a good time the whole time, we hope. I have some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring Kris Jenner, who's got some words of wisdom for me on being a good grandmother, or in her case, a good lovey.
You know, you start thinking of what you want your grandmother name to be. Like, are they going to call me grandma like I called my grandmother? So I got to choose my name, which is now Lovey.
I'll also be joined by Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, to name a few. So come on in and take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood.
I loved it. Your energy and joy.
I'm squeezing every minute I can for you out of this season of Next Question.
Last question, I promise. You have to go. I have to go. But it's been so fun.
And I can't wait for you to hear it. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, fam. I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, a daily podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Every weekday, we bring you conversations with the culture makers who inspire us.
Like our recent episode with Hollywood royalty Regina and Raina King. We talked about the creative power of women's relationships.
I feel like, thank God for women, like, especially when it comes to Black women. The way we lean on our mothers, our grandmothers, our sisters, our friends, we're just each other's pulse. I mean, it's molecular, you know?
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back. We're headed to Madagascar for giant cockroaches. Madagascar is one of the places that you see a lot in dealing with unique organisms, because you're talking about an island that is set aside from the rest of the continent.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is where you encounter lemurs, the only place you encounter lemurs outside of a zoo. And the lemur would not necessarily be able to survive elsewhere, but here they have evolved and fill the niche rather nicely that doesn't exist elsewhere.
Yeah, let's talk about that. That's that lack of predators and competition mm-hmm. that drives some of the size of these creatures, and this is called island gigantism. It is a biological phenomenon that is present for animals that live on isolated islands, and they tend to grow bigger and bigger again because they don't have anything running after it, and because everything is pretty plentiful, right? It's like a cornucopia of food out there for them.
Yeah, I mean, really, it comes down. A lot of it comes down to them living in a protected environment. In many of these cases, you have an ecosystem that is set aside from the rest. That whatever kind of predators are roaming around on the continent at large, they're not necessarily here, or the predators that are here, they don't have access to the same prey. So you end up with a kind of microcosm unto itself, where different rules end up applying.
Yeah, and according to paleontologist Virginie Million, island species evolve faster than mainland species, particularly over shorter time intervals of years to thousands of years. So you really do get to see the, mm-hmm. the proof of the pudding much faster in these environments.
One example of an older island giant that I ran across, and this too was a Discovery News article, but 5 to 3 million years ago, you had a creature known as the Neuragulus rex, which lived on the small island of Menorca, and it weighed about 26.4 pounds. It had no enemies, and it was essentially a giant bunny rabbit.
I've seen pictures of this.
Yeah, kind of like Night of the Lepus, except the other thing, not only did it grow larger, mm-hmm. but as it grows larger and has no need of predators, it doesn't need a hop. It doesn't need ginormous ears with which to hear everything. It doesn't need big eyes with which to see everything. So it kind of loses those features. It's kind of like an aging prize fighter or something, you know? Just lets it the gut go and no longer has the reflexes it needs to fight because it doesn't need them. But still, it's a pretty impressive creature, the idea that you had essentially rabbits.
I will say the photo I saw, it did kind of look pudgy.
Yeah.
It didn't look like it had been, you know, scurrying around that much.
Because it had won. Like, from an evolutionary point of view, it's like, I don't need, if you're not working out, you don't keep the muscles. And it's kind of a similar thing as evolution rolls out, you know? If you don't need those ears, then eventually you're going to lose them.
Yeah, you could tell that it abandoned its bowflex.
Yes.
Yeah. Madagascar hissing cockroach, as I mentioned before, found in Madagascar, off the southeast coast of Africa, largest living cockroach and the only known insect capable of hissing by forcing air through its spiracles. These are breathing holes, mm-hmm. rather than rubbing their appendages together.
And how big do these guys get?
About 3 inches long by 1 inch, which doesn't seem entirely huge until you actually see one in person.
Yeah, I've heard of people traveling there, and you're sleeping through the night, and then your cell phone rings, and you pick it up, and you're actually picking up a hissing cockroach, answering it. And since you're not really all that awake, you end up having like a 5-minute conversation with the abdomen of a cockroach.
Right, and little do you know that hissing sound is actually a mating call, so you're being wooed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, Zoo Atlanta has some hissing cockroaches that they'll bring out every once in a while.
Oh, yeah. It seems like they are a frequent exhibit at zoos. I don't know if they're easy to ship or easy to keep or
easy to handle. They're not going to bite you.
And they're huge and gross, and little boys just go gaga for them.
And the girls, they love them too. The males have horns too, so it makes them look really interesting. Now, if they flew, that would be my nightmare.
But that's another thing. You get big like that, you don't need wings, right?
Well, that's the other thing too. There's a limit to morphology here in that, if it's to your advantage to get larger and larger, great, you're going to do it. But once it inhibits your ability, so if the cockroach was a creature that flew in the first place, mm-hmm. And I know there are some, but mainly cockroaches do not fly. But let's say, for instance, a bird, if it became so large that it was on the precipice of not being able to fly anymore, then it would that's where the constraint comes. That's where the morphology of the outer limits of it just end.
Yeah, we mentioned some of this in our Godzilla, Barbie, King Kong episode where we talk about giant organisms. And certainly the large, it's worth remembering that, say, take a beetle, you know, even like a fairly large beetle.
Mm-hmm.
In a sense, it's a physically perfect thing. Like, everything about its proportions and its size is perfect for the size at which it exists. If you were to somehow magically enlarge a beetle, it wouldn't be able to function at a larger size
mm-hmm.
because it's exoskeleton, right? This is more than just armoring. It's more than just a tough, shiny jacket that the beetle wears. Like, this is a structural skeleton that holds in its insect guts and protects it from the outside world. And if you were to increase the size of a beetle, then you also have to really increase the thickness of the exoskeleton,
right.
And it just becomes an impossible equation rather quickly.
It was just amazing,
which
that
is why you don't see really large organisms outside of the Dark Crystal that have large, you know, armor-like exoskeletons.
Well, and to me, though, it's just so such a testament to nature and how cool it is that it can adapt to that in the first place.
Right.
That dwarfism or gigantism can take place, the shrinking or the increasing like that. I also wanted to mention the giant weta of New Zealand. Its genus name is Deinocrita, and it's Greek for terrible grasshopper. Because I look at the size of your hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is how large this little booger is. It is among the heaviest insects on Earth, weighing 3 times more than a mouse. And apparently, in captivity, if you offer it a carrot, it will eat it.
Oh, I think I've seen pictures of that.
Yeah. Allison, actually, the science editor, Allison mm-hmm. Loudermilk, sent us a photo of that.
Oh, yes. That's where I had seen that before.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. She said,
I assumed it was her pet. I thought she kept those.
It could be. Yeah. I don't know. She said, I'm assuming that this little guy could actually have a conversation with you. And I remember thinking, yes, indeed. I think he could.
Yeah. We mentioned New Zealand. Again, the giant birds. It was very much a bird world for the longest. So again, you get into situations where you have an island or a large body of land that is set aside from the rest of the world,
mm-hmm.
and you see a certain amount of competition fall to the wayside, and then you can see some very unique organisms, very large organisms, grow to dominance.
And it is this Wonderland effect. Actually, there's something called the Wonderland effect. In 1964,
which is alluding to Alice and
Alice in the Wonderland.
One pill makes you larger. One pill makes you smaller. Right?
Well, now I'm thinking of the song "One Pill Makes You." Yes,
it's a great track.
It is a great track. But yeah, Alice in Wonderland. She shrinks. She mm-hmm. increases. In 1964, biologist J. Bristol Foster studied insular gigantism and dwarfism, and he came to the conclusion that rodents, for instance, tend toward gigantism, while carnivores, lagomorphs like rabbits and hares, and artiodactyls, deers, hippos, and other even-toed ungulates are more likely to become dwarfed. And overall, amongst mammal species that colonize islands, big ones have a tendency to shrink, while small ones are able to get larger.
So again, it's like it's a new world, and the occupants of this new world have to change their ways. And again, I'm sort of personifying evolution here to a certain extent, and for which I, to some of you, I apologize. But yeah, they find themselves in this new world,
mm-hmm.
and they realize they're going to have to change their ways to survive. They're going to have to cut the budget, or they're going to have to ramp up their activity.
Yeah.
And so you see the smaller animals becoming bigger, the bigger animals having to really cut down and become smaller.
Yeah, and they really haven't quite figured out what drives some species becoming larger and some remaining the same or some becoming smaller on these islands, because they don't know if it's because a species arrived there and there was already another species quite similar to it, a snake, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and it decided, okay, it's best here if I just shrink or I stay the same.
One of the things that really surprised me when we were researching this was the situation with the Komodo dragon, which we generally think of as an example of island gigantism. It's the largest lizard we have. It's 10 feet long, weighs 330 pounds. Back when the show was that stuff to blow your mind or stuff from the science lab that did the Komodo dragon episode? It may have been.
I think it was from the lab.
Yeah. It may have been a lab episode. But at the time, I remember reading all these amazing things about the Komodo dragon. You just keep thinking, oh, it's a giant, it's a dragon. But there's the theory that this is actually a case of the island dwarfism.
Yeah.
Because Komodo dragons, they live on the Isle of Komodo in Indonesia. But they also live on the on this other island called Flores. And on Flores, they've found fossil evidence of a much larger dragon, if you will, that would have been 23 feet long and would have weighed over 1,300 pounds. And so the idea is that the Komodo is the island dwarf of this amazing creature.
Which just turns everybody's thinking on its head, right?
It does.
Very interesting.
It doesn't make the Komodo dragon any less awesome or any less a living dinosaur, in a sense.
It's still a giant lizard.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't take that away from it.
Yeah, never try and take anything away from Komodo dragon.
That's right. It'll take your toe.
All right. So there's just a nice, I think, introduction to the world of gigantism. Certainly, we could sit here all day and talk about other well-known or less well-known giant animals. Certainly, we didn't say anything about Galapagos tortoise or Japanese spider crabs, but these are all wonderful animals in their own right and worth looking into.
Definitely worth looking at a couple of pictures, especially that Japanese spider crab.
Yeah.
It's all legs. So we will talk about dwarfism another time.
Yeah, dwarfism is certainly a podcast topic unto itself.
Yeah.
Especially as you're talking about human beings and why are some people smaller in stature in cases of actual dwarfism among humans and other similar situations. So, like, there's a whole podcast unto
itself.
And
human morphology throughout the ages. Mm-hmm.
And to what extent is being tall, not all that ideal anyway? Maybe we should be shorter.
I don't know. You can pick the apples really easily. So, you have that advantage over me.
Yeah, but I'm not that good at climbing the tree. If I was smaller, I'd be a little lower to the ground, better able to climb up there and get them anyway.
True.
Yeah.
True.
All right, well, let's call the robot over here and listen to some mail. All right, we have a couple of bits of listener mail here that come to us from fans on Facebook. So I guess it wasn't really email. It was more fan messaging through the Facebook.
It was communication.
Communication. This is apparently how the young kids are communicating now. Anyway, they're not using their email accounts, right?
This is what I hear on the street.
That's what the street tells me.
That's what I heard on MARTA this morning.
Well, anyway, Abigail writes and says, I laughed when I saw your Scream podcast because I put your podcast on in the car on the way home from daycare to keep my infant from screaming. I think it might be Robert's voice because it also worked when he did a voice for the Stuff You Should Know Shark Week special, which just published a couple of weeks ago. You can go check that out with Josh and Chuck. Anyway, I digress. When I was in Girl Scout camp, we used to play a game called Roller Coaster. They'd line us up at the edge of the field, and when the counselor yelled go, we'd take a deep breath and start running and screaming at the same time. You kept running until you couldn't scream anymore. The point of the game was to get the furthest. As a kid, it was such a joy to be given the freedom to unleash the scream. But the true value of the game became apparent when I became a counselor. Not only was it an amazing way to get out the frustration of managing 10 kids 24/7, but it also tired them out, making them easier to manage. It wasn't until then that I realized why the counselors always won the game. New listener, and always enjoy your podcast. Thank you for helping me make my ride home more peaceful.
That's awesome. So that's kind of like a form of primal scream therapy.
Yeah. And I'm glad that my voice has this effect on this child.
Oh.
Yeah. Maybe we'll record a track of me just, saying nursery rhymes.
I was going to say, you could do that. It could be like Jack and Jill went up the hill. not necessarily like that, but yeah.
Yeah, I saw a YouTube video where a kid had the same reaction, but to rap lyrics by Biggie, where...
I've seen that,
It's pretty amazing because it's like he'll be screaming his head off and then they start playing some Biggie and he just chills out. So, but again, probably not good for the kid's vocabulary later on.
Or maybe good.
It depends.
There's nuance there,
depends,
right?
What he's going to. There is nuance. So it depends what he's aiming to do in life, I guess. We also heard from Nathan on Facebook. Nathan writes in and says, I have really been enjoying your podcast. I just listened to the horror episode. I, too, saw the Ghoulie VHS cover art at an age when those movies were out of my reach. Maybe it was my age or personal phobia, but I couldn't get it out of my head. And again, for those of you who are just tuning in, this was a 90s video cover that showed a grotesque little gremlin monster coming out of a toilet with, like, razor teeth and fancy suspenders. It was really stupid, but kind of mortifying. Anyway, Nathan,
I like continues. That you noted the fancy suspenders.
Well, yeah, that's what makes it so ridiculous. Why are they wearing suspenders? And why are they so clean? It just came out of the toilet. Anyway, Nathan continues. I went through a stage in my life where I always brought some sort of weapon into the bathroom with me. I think it also has to do with the fact that everyone feels vulnerable with their pants around their ankles. Makes for a slow getaway. I've told friends about it, but usually get the "you're alone there" look. Keep up the great work. So, indeed, when I brought up Ghoulies, it was because it did kind of traumatize me and did make me think twice about sitting on a toilet for fear that a suspended monster would come out of the hole and eat me. And I never even thought to bring a weapon to the toilet with me. I'm glad I didn't fall into that pattern, but...
You know, there's actually there's a lot of research about this sphincter effect and evolution. I kid you not.
Oh, yeah?
About how you have to feel safe, obviously. I mean, it makes a lot of sense if you're going to void your bowels.
Yeah, it's not something we can do on the move, really. I mean, maybe you can train yourself to it, but generally not so much.
That's right. Yeah. You never know when a saber-toothed tiger is around the corner or a ghoulie's in your toilet.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, if you guys have something to share with us, if you have a particularly favorite example of gigantism, be it an amazing prehistoric animal, an amazing living animal, or some individual out of wrestling or entertainment or just general history, we'd love to hear about them. I can think of one or two famous giants offhand from history that we didn't mention, but I'll leave our listeners to come up with those guys.
Challenge.
Yeah. You can find us on Facebook, where we are Stuff to Blow Your Mind. You can also find us on Twitter, where our handle is Blow the Mind.
And you can always drop us a line at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.